Hello, Miles.
Yo, how are you doing?
Pretty good, man. I'm actually just realizing when we scheduled our time to call, I'm actually running on Central Time. So when you mentioned 2 p.m., it's actually 2 p.m. here. It's 3 p.m. where you're at, isn't it? You're still in Michigan, right?
Actually, so right now I'm in Ohio, at school.
Oh, okay. So that kind of leads me right into our introductions, man. Kind of talk to me about what's going on now, who you are, where you're from, and I mean, because the last time I talked to you, we were both in Michigan. So kind of shed some insight on that a little bit first.
Yeah,
And
for sure.
yeah.
So I'm doing kind of like the traditional college thing, going to school, and then when school's kind of we go on break or whatever, I'll go back home to Michigan with my parents. So I'm at Wittenberg University in Springfield, Ohio. It's kind of a small liberal arts school.
Cool.
So that's D3, which is fantastic, you know.
What are you studying there?
Exercise science and math.
Great. Oh my gosh. That's awesome, man. So, outside of just your athletic pursuits here, I do want to dive in a little bit to your program and kind of talk to you first about what you've gathered so far in your tenure in college is being part of the exercise science program. So talk to me a little bit about that. How's that journey been for you? Have you stayed in exercise science throughout the course of your tenure in college, or have you switched majors?
Yeah, so coming out of high school, I knew right away that exercise science was definitely the field that I wanted to be in. And so that was something I jumped into right away. And then the math minor was kind of more of a just an interest thing.
I've never heard anybody say interest in math in the same sentence. So you're already unique on the list here of guests that I've had. Yeah, man, exercise science is starting to become a really prevalent field of study. I mean, there's always been universities that have had them, but I'm really starting to see the prevalence of a wide range of universities offering exercise science. Now, what would you say in terms? So you're in your junior year, right? Right now,
I'm a senior right now, actually.
you're a senior. Okay, so you're going in. You're in your last year right now. How is school and COVID? How's all of that going, man? Because I mean, you see all of these outlets on the media and things being portrayed. Give us the real scoop from a personal experience, how you're handling COVID right now.
Yeah, so actually my roommates and I have talked about this a lot. We were kind of trying to figure out who this was more difficult for, whether that was the freshmen coming in who have never experienced college before, or the seniors who have who know what it's like. And we think we decided that it was probably the seniors who have come through, already kind of had like set expectations from experience. And so that's pretty, it can be hard, you know?
Oh, I can only imagine, man. I mean, again, my perspective and everything that I see on the news and just different media outlets, whether it be TikTok, Instagram, just people's kind of snippets on media of their personal accounts. And it really seems like a tough time right now on all fronts. And like you said about being a senior, you kind of already have this cumulative experience through the last 3 years that you're going into your expectation in your senior year being somewhat of the same, right? But everything has changed. The landscape of education has changed. and how we ultimately communicate has changed. And it's really, really interesting to see kind of in real time how things are developing. And that leads me into my next question too, which is, you know, how are you dealing with COVID and your pursuits in fitness and in sport? Because the audience may not know, but you're a runner and you've been running for as long as I've known you, dating back to high school. I want to say probably junior year for me, sophomore, freshman year for you. You've always been an athlete. So talk to me a little bit about how COVID has maybe changed or maybe not changed the landscape for running. Because right now, as we understand, being outside is a low risk environment, right?
Right. However, so it is low risk, but being on a team with other people, you are in close proximity, and assuming that you guys are all running together, you guys are pretty much all breathing the same air. You know, you got people behind you, in front of you. And yeah. So
I guess I never thought of it like that.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of studies saying that that is still low risk, but just in terms of the team aspect, you know, say you're getting done with a rep, you finish with somebody, and then you get your rest, right? You got to think about how much you're breathing, trying to process all the stuff that's going on in your body. So you're breathing hard, and, you know, you're right next to another guy doing the same thing.
And it makes me really wonder, to go off of that note, because running is hard, and I'm going to go right out on Front Street and say this is outside of my wheelhouse of my own abilities, what you're capable of doing, and in the type of running that you do. You're long distance, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, man, that is such a tough, tough pursuit. And for someone like me, I mean, I'm all fast twitch, so like thinking anything outside of an 8-second effort is like, whoa, it's crazy for me. So to go off of what your training looks like right now, if you were to estimate, how much do you think that it's impacting your psychology and maybe taking away some of your energy for performance, thinking about COVID as you race? Is it something you've thought about?
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah, so there are a lot of guys. I actually ended up getting COVID, unfortunately.
And, oh my gosh, no way.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so glad you're doing well, man.
Yeah, it was, ended up having to go to the ER for some heart issues. And, you know, we're on our way back. I just got to progress through the rest of the stuff that my trainer and our team doctor are prescribing, and then we'll be back to running. But it's been about a month and a half.
Wow, Miles, that is pretty crazy, man. So talk to me about that. I mean, talk to me about your experience with COVID. I mean, this is unexpected. I even through our conversations, I didn't realize you had contracted the virus. So talk to me about what that journey's been like.
Yeah, so like I'll just run you through kind of like the timeline of what was going on.
Please do.
All summer, you know, training was good. I was at home in Michigan, which is doing like fantastic with the responses. And so no real
I must say it they are taking a much better approach in controlling the virus in comparison to where I'm at in Tennessee. So I will agree with you there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so Michigan was pretty low risk. No real scares there. And then I come to here, college campus, and it's kind of like a different environment, you know?
Right.
So many people from so many different places, and there's only like campus is only so big.
Right.
So right away, there was kind of a difference in attitude coming here. Things were a little more like tense, a little scarier.
I can imagine, dude.
But, you know, yeah, so we just kept training in very small groups. And then kind of like, I want to say a couple weeks in, we had a big, huge spike in cases.
At the university, on your team exclusively?
At the university.
Okay.
And so with that, basically 2 days before I had symptoms, my training partner and I decided that we were going to kind of back off so that our immune systems would be up and, you know, we'd have a better chance of dealing with the virus in this kind of scary moment. Unfortunately, we made that decision a little late and I ended up,
oh no.
Yeah, I ended up getting it.
Oh man. Wow. So your idea was, if I'm getting this correct, you were, because what we know about training in what I want the audience to understand here is that when you exhaust your body and it's fatigued and you're doing that consistently, although it's planned, right? Your kind of fatigue is planned throughout the week because you have a coach that mitigates how much you're running, how much you're training. You're still at a weakened state, which ultimately influences your immunity. And in a perfect world, right, we're going to be able to recover, come back with better stamina, come back stronger, whatever the case is, that's a construct of our training. But you're saying that you had this kind of lower immunity because of the fatigue and you opted out of training a little too late, right?
Yeah. I mean, we weren't going to stop running, but we were going to kind of
dialed back, right?
Exactly. Lower mileage, okay. Maybe take the workouts a little easier just for a couple of days, just so
right. Things
would be a little safer.
Yeah. And you ended up getting the virus anyway.
Yep.
Wow, dude. So before we go into anything else, talk to me about your personal experience with that. I mean, there's people, we're up to 214,000 deaths in the United States alone. Millions of people infected with this virus. And as an athlete who's in great shape and great health, can you give us some insight on this, on the importance of monitoring your symptoms?
Right. So the first thing that came on for me was kind of this level of fatigue that I hadn't really been feeling. I didn't know if my iron was low or what have you. And then after that, my breathing started to go as well.
Like labored breathing?
Yeah. You know, I was like, this doesn't feel right. Like walking up these steps should not be this difficult. And that's when I knew.
And within what day span did that occur?
I would say Thursday, I kind of noticed some fatigue. And then by Saturday, I was like, yep. Like I knew I had like a 1 or 2 day window from Saturday that life was going to get rough.
Oh, man. Yeah, and you're going in with the expectation of like, oh, this is going to be hell. Oh, Miles, that is heartbreaking, man. So the fatigue sets in. The breathing becomes labored. What's the conversation like with not only your family, but those around you?
Yeah, so at that point, I ended up locking myself in my room, so I wasn't exposing any of my roommates. Pretty much only came out for bathroom and to grab food. And when I came out, like, you know, had to be masked within my own house. So that in itself is not the most fun thing in the world. And then
right
top of that, the conversations with my mom were like, honestly, they were pretty scary. You know, I have asthma, and so that was immediately a concern away.
Wow. So with the self-quarantine being in place, did you talk to your coaches during this time? Was there a plan of action once there was news of, okay, now we've got our athletes infected? What did that look like?
Yeah, so at that point, as soon as the school's cases went up, even the runs in small groups, from our athletic training staff and coaches, that was no longer something we were going to be doing for the next week to 2 weeks. And so right away, they were thinking preventive for the rest of the group. And then for me specifically, I reached out to our athletic trainer and the coaches to let them know, like, hey, I'm exhibiting some symptoms. I'm putting myself into self-isolation until I can go get tested. And the response from them was, all right, we're going to check in with you every day. Let us know how you're doing.
Right. Well, and there's a lot of things right now in the midst. I mean, not only the landscape of how we communicate and how we conduct ourselves in the world is changing, but the world of sport and entertainment and everything we know is starting to change. And we've got college football that I only am using this as an analogous example because that's something that's currently relatable. But the NCAA is doing restrictions by implementing, you know, a safety precaution of saying, hey, if we exceed over 7% of our team being infected or exposed to the virus, we're going to shut down the program for the season. Is that something that's talked about? Is there a layout? Does that sound similar to kind of what you guys are going through? It's not verbatim what I'm saying here, but you know, there are some structures in place to kind of say, hey, like if it gets to this level where we've got this percentage of athletes or students infected, then we've got to shut the show down.
Right. So we've actually kind of been going here at Wittenberg specifically. We've been going kind of back and forth on such, like, a lot of that. There are different phases that each team has to go through in order to hold practices. And part of those phases are, number one, can people be responsible at practice? And then number two, how are the COVID cases reacting to this specific team's practices, right? And so each team has to progress through different phases. And if you if you don't make it through a phase or what have you, you really just don't have team practices.
Okay. Now, it sounds like as far as the athletes go, you being included with your team here, there seems to be quite a bit of at least engagement with the matter. You see a lot of universities maybe not taking action or struggling to come up with a conclusive answer as to how to approach this situation. Would you say that your university is doing right by you guys in trying to come up with the right answer?
Oh, absolutely. You know, sometimes you hear some things from other places and you're like, wow, that's like, you can kind of feel that it's malicious in terms of, or not, maybe malicious is not the right word. Selfish is the word I'm looking for. You know, some decisions feel very selfish towards the university, towards the university's athletic success, instead of student safety. And, you know, that is very frustrating. But from Wittenberg specifically, no, there is none of that. It feels like there's none of that selfishness. to me, it feels practicality. They want students on campus. They want to do everything they can for them to make this enjoyable. But then at the same time, obviously safety is a large part of it. So juggling that, I think Wittenberg has actually done a phenomenal job.
I believe that, and much of the rest of the country believes that testing is a major component to realizing the virus early enough to take preventative measure. Would you say that your university is up to par with testing and where it should be with the level of importance that some of our government leaders place on it? Would you say they line up the same?
Yes and no. And when I say no, I don't necessarily – I am not blaming the university for lack of trying, but there are certain instances where we're kind of clinging on to old hours of the health center, kind of the old medical infrastructure that they're trying to hold on to without expanding it too much. If that makes sense, and within,
yeah, it sounds like there's not enough resources and manpower.
Exactly. And so,
I mean, the rest of the country is literally facing right now. There's not enough hands on deck. And, you know, this is exactly what I was afraid of. This is unprecedented. Everybody understands that. And I think, from what it sounds like in what I see with colleges that are open right now and have open campuses and are still trying to carry on with athletics, is we've got almost like this prioritization system. You know, you've got your athletes that have better testing parameters and some of your student body that are involved having better testing parameters. Would you say that the general student that maybe isn't involved but is on campus, are they maybe not getting some of the best resources that some of the other students on campus are getting?
To tell you the truth, I can only kind of speculate on that. But I would say regular students are doing just as well, you know, getting the same access to any resources that they would need.
That's great.
But I would say also at Wittenberg, athletes are extremely fortunate to have athletic trainers who are very knowledgeable and ingrained already in the process of contact tracing and the like.
That's great. Yeah, that's really good to hear, man. Effort on a Ohio, that's something that's controversial there already. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, sorry, you were kind of going in and out there for a sec.
Hello. Sorry, it looks like we had a dip in connection there.
Okay.
Yeah, so I want to kind of bring us back around full circle here. This kind of opened up a whole new range of questions that in dialogue I wasn't quite prepared to have on the podcast, but I'm really, really glad we did. I mean, these are some of the personal thoughts and questions I've had throughout the course of this pandemic since it started, and since I've been aware of it since February and watched kind of unravel. Being able to talk to you, which I appreciate you sharing your insight, Miles, being able to talk to you kind of on your personal experience with the matter, not only contracting the virus, but how it's being handled, and really analyzing the how it's handled through the university and how it's influenced your athletic pursuits, and kind of bringing us back into that. What would you say in terms of this being a new norm? Do you see this being a new norm? Imagine this. Right now, we understand that the virus is still out there, right? So everybody's still going to be wearing masks and still going to be doing their part. And we won't even have certainty that it'll be gone a year from now. So do you see this being the new norm? Are you prepared for that as a competitor, to be wearing a mask and having all of these security measures in place?
Yeah, you know, I definitely am ready for that, even if it might be a challenge. But I do foresee this becoming the new norm. And to a degree, I think it already has, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right too, man. It really seems like yesterday, but it's been a while we've been in this thing. And, you know, life goes on, and we've reopened the country, and we run in a capitalist type of structure. So everybody's got a hand in, and everybody's continuing to turn that cog. And we haven't really had a chance to, like, take a look and really see what's happening here around us. But I look at the nature of our world now and seeing how it's impacted our athletics, and seeing how it's impacted all of our communication. And it does seem to me like we are shifting towards, you know, potentially masks, not mandated, but more people just wearing them out of comfort of keeping themselves safe. Would you agree to that?
I would agree. I think right off the bat, you know, people were upset about this new thing that they were going to have to do. And I think now a lot of people are, you know, they get it. They understand.
I would like to think that, man. Like I said, I live in Tennessee right now, and there's plenty of people that don't even have a clue. So, you know, I think that's just a matter of region, and that goes into a whole nother topic of podcasts, and we could talk about that all day. I'm sure you know where I'm going, but yeah, I do think you're right. There's a lot more people that understand the dangers of this virus, and just the risk involved in general with not being aware of your health. And Miles, you've contracted the virus and you're a healthy individual. Would you say that if you didn't run and you weren't athletic, that this could potentially be fatal? Could this have been fatal for you had you not been in the shape you're in?
Oh, 100%. You know, we know from science that, like, if you are out of shape, your health risks go through the roof, not only regularly, but through with COVID as well. And so I fully believe that me being in the shape that I was in helped me get through and over the worst of the COVID symptoms better.
So for you, it was about a month it took you to kind of dig yourself out of the grave, right? As far as your fatigue and just some of the symptoms you were exhibiting.
Yeah. So there was about a week period where the symptoms were pretty, pretty rough. You know, think bad flu in terms of that week. But okay. It's really the after bits that are honestly even harder to deal with.
Well, give me some insight on what you mean there, if you can elaborate.
Yeah, absolutely. So right off the bat, you know, your body is not doing what it's used to for a prolonged period of time. You know, when I was coming back, I was going to class for an hour. After that hour, I'd come back and just go back to sleep.
Oh my gosh. So just like extreme fatigue, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. It was extreme. And then I think this is also related. There's a lot of research coming out from regions that have kind of been through COVID already, more specifically China, where they found that 30 to 50% of people who have had COVID are experiencing almost something like PTSD, where it raises their depression and anxiety levels to new heights. And yeah, I'd be happy to share that article with you because it is a very interesting read.
Well. Oh my gosh, dude, please do. I mean, this whole conversation up to this point has been completely enthralling. This is as close as you can get to understanding the virus. So I really do appreciate any insight you can provide. I would love to take a look at that article after we're finished up chatting, if you don't mind sending that. But you're coming out of contracting the virus a month later. What was your motivation like to return not only to school? It sounds like that was a struggle as it was, but running. I mean, was that a personal hardship? Talk to me your feelings surrounding your athletic pursuits, because right now you're okay, right? Like you're feeling pretty fully recovered, or where are we at?
Right now, currently we are still on our way back. With heavy exercise comes chest tightness, and then with chest tightness comes the risk of worse issues. People, especially athletes coming out of COVID, they really worry about myocarditis, which is the swelling of the heart and the tissues surrounding the heart, which make the heart need to beat faster because it can't get the same blood volume. So that's something that everybody's really concerned about here, especially, and that's largely the biggest issue with athletes returning.
And being that your training is essentially aerobic threshold training, you're increasing your aerobic capacity, I would assume. Not always, right? You're kind of periodizing your training bouts, but for the most part, the goal is pushing that threshold a little bit further so that you can increase your overall aerobic capacity to run longer. How has that impacted your training pursuits? Do your trainers, are your coaches considering this when they're trying to get you to PR? Are PRs even part of the conversation right now, dude? Like, talk to me about what that looks like. This running, everything about running, I don't even, like, it's already outside my wheelhouse, and now we add the element to COVID. Like, what does it look like? What's the landscape like?
Yeah, so before contracting the virus, I was setting pretty big PRs for myself, coming off of a really good summer of training. And now
with... Yeah, so what were your times, man? I'm sure the audience, the people that are interested in running, would love to know kind of what you're working with.
Yeah, so we ran a 4K. And to tell you the truth, I couldn't tell you the time off the top of my head. But it was looking like I was going to go, if I were to run a full 5K spiked up on a cross-country course, it was looking like I was going to dip under 16 minutes for the first time. And
holy shnikes.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not the fastest guy around, but that was going to be something. Personally, nice for me. And then I was excited to just keep pushing that. But yeah, it's whenever something like this happens, whether it's injury, sickness, or other things go on the back burner, and you take your time to grieve, you take your time to process, and then And then you move on and you figure out what's next.
Well, and that's just it, right? Like, has your training staff, has your coaches pivoted to kind of mitigate what your training looks like, even with COVID? It sounds like you guys dialed back, and that was a personal choice before you contracted the virus, dialing back on your workload physically. Now, what is that looking like coming back in terms of your training? Is that something that you're keeping in mind as you train?
Personally, my training has been very limited. I've only run 2 or 3 times since contracting the virus, and that's been within the last week or so. Mostly for me, it's been a lot of time spent on the bike, just to get some sort of exercise in, some sort of aerobic work. But for the guys who are healthy, they are now moving at full steam. We are planning on doing the infamous Michigan workout on Tuesday, which is a very famous running workout that lots of people do. And it's a brutal one. And so they're looking forward to doing that. And then the following week doing a time trial, but immediately they did back off training for a week or two. When Wittenberg did get that large spike.
Okay. Yeah, man, I imagine, because it's so relevant, right? The virus attacking specifically the lungs that we know and severely impacting lung efficiency and oxygen. And being that your sport is so heavily dependent on oxygen, if clearly, but aerobic capacity. So, you know, would you say that you are optimistic about your ability to kind of get back to where you were within the next month or so? I mean, is this something that you see as like a 6-month recovery process? Are we looking at just a couple of months and you think you'll be back on the grind like you were? Or?
Yeah, I think I'm at this point, I'm feeling very optimistic with my last few runs.
That's great. That's great, man.
And so I think probably I can be back to where I was in the summer by come, depending on how fast we move through the return process, hopefully by mm-hmm. Thanksgiving and at worst by Christmas. And then from there, it's going to be just to build again.
Wow. Well, if this doesn't give anybody that bit of insight to take care of themselves, I don't know what else to do for you. I would really say that this whole dilemma that we're facing, that you faced, it's not only something that we carry with us now consciously part of our lives, but it's really affected, I would say it's really affected people's kind of comfortability going out and doing things. I don't know how it is right now in Ohio, but like, I still, although we're not on quarantine, like I don't leave the house as much. Like, do you notice some of your behaviors changing?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you know, I'm pretty comfortable going to restaurants because, at least restaurants that I go to, because I know those specific restaurants are, you know, doing a good job and risk is pretty low. But, you know, I do limit which restaurants I go to, especially here in the Springfield area. Some of them, you go in and you're like, oh, like you see some things and you're like, oh.
You're like, maybe
yeah,
not.
You know, maybe when the pandemic's over, I'll come back. But,
right.
Yeah, and I think You know, I think at this point we've all kind of had those experiences of like watching TV or anything, and you see a large group of people, and there's almost like this gut reaction now where you're like, oh, I would not want to be there. Like,
Isn't that funny, dude? I was just, and that's kind of why I brought that up is like, I look at even just looking at movies and TV shows now, like that were obviously produced pre-pandemic. It's like, man, you guys are standing too close, you know? Or like, why is there a group of
Oh.
like 20 people all just herded together? It's so funny to think about, because I mean, we're all kind of elevating our conscience, any long consciousness, geez, consciousness, anymore, at least I feel like, and we're all kind of being able to understand the depth of, you know, some of the things that are changing around us, and it sounds like you're aware of it. I am as well, being able to see kind of how people's reactions towards, you know, just being in a group with people or even eating at a restaurant, like you've said. And man, it's just so interesting and funny to see, kind of people's just some people are completely unaffected by it. And it takes, you know, some people like you and us to just get like super bent out of shape about super bent out of shape about it. And I can't do anything else but laugh about it at this point, man. Is it pretty bad in Ohio as far as people maybe not taking it as serious as you think they should?
I'm not so sure necessarily around me. You know, you go into Meijer and they have the sign, you must have a mask to enter. You walk in and you see. You know, most people got masks on, and then you see, you know, the dude who's got like it pulled over his nose, like his nose is out, which at that point, you know, you're barely, you're
Oh
not,
man,
yeah.
that to me is even worse than like just you might as well just like wear a shirt that says I'm a big dummy.
Exactly. You know, it's already over your face, right?
Yeah.
Like, it can't be that much more comfortable.
Oh my goodness. I know, man. Yeah. It's like I said, I can't do anything else but laugh at it at this point. It seems like the world's on fire more and more every day. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about kind of bringing us back to all seriousness here, a little bit about your diet. Is there like a did you change the way you ate to you know to some extent to like maybe be a part of your recovery process? Were there foods that you found were helpful in your recovery with COVID? I mean, is there anything that we can shed some light on that maybe personally and anecdotally that you've experienced about some of the things you ate during COVID or couldn't eat, that may or may not help?
Yeah, so right away, regularly, I love spicy food. I love salsa.
Oh shit, man, you're
It's
crazy.
oh, it just makes food so much better.
Oh my
So, but I
gosh.
have found myself really enjoying spicy food more so.
That's
Yeah,
interesting.
I'm not sure, and especially like fresh food. It's seems to have more of an impact on me now than when I was really training. Like, if I eat, you know, fresh food, lots of greens, lots of veggies, you know, I feel like the benefits coming out of COVID from that in terms of how I feel are just that much bigger.
Right. So your diet's been pretty, or rather your nutrition's been pretty on point then for the most part since you've dealt with the
Yeah,
virus.
and then actually I was talking with a friend about this the other day, and I am in no way a vegan or a vegetarian. I believe meat has a place in a diet, and if you choose not to do that, you know, like you can certainly make it. But me personally, as a college student, that's not something that I have bought into. However, coming out of COVID, I do find that if I eat large quantities of meat or animal products, my heart has started, like, it doesn't like that very much.
That's really interesting. Wow. And that's such a powerful account to state too. I mean, I think that, and that's why I wanted to ask is, like, you know, we think of foods as fuel for the body, and I'm looking at this from, and I'm sure you can relate, you know, an exercise science, like physiology, exercise physiology standpoint, performance. And when we look at kind of the nature of your training, we see meat as one of those foods that maybe doesn't complement your efforts as well as a complex or a simple carbohydrate. And would you say that you were probably pretty normal before the onset of COVID, right? As far as your willingness and ability to digest animal meat.
Oh, absolutely.
Product. So now you're saying that there's kind of this inflammatory response in the body upon eating meat now.
Yeah.
Wow, man. That's so I find that really important because right now, clearly they're trying to develop a vaccine. So there's not a ton that we completely understand about the virus. I mean, we know that it's killing people. We know that it's making others severely sick. And to have that kind of anecdotal report that, you know, meat may be a culprit for some people, at least to bring awareness to it. I really think that can help a lot of people. Is there anything else that you can think of? Like, if you want to elaborate on meat, are we talking beef? Are we talking pork? You know, did you have some bacon? What did that look like?
Yeah, so bacon definitely did it. And then, yeah.
How did I know it was bacon?
Even regularly, you know, nobody eats some bacon and goes, wow, I feel great.
That's true. That's fair.
I don't
think
I've ever heard anybody do that.
I usually feel like taking the world's, like, longest nap.
Right,
after.
Right. But yeah, so for me personally, as a college student who, you know, when you're cooking, you don't have time to do all these phenomenal meals. And so chicken sausage has for a long time been my go-to because it comes, you know, kind of pre-cooked.
It's high protein, decent fat.
Tastes pretty good. Yeah. So mostly chicken sausage. And I realized that upon adding that to, I typically in my rice cooker, I'll do rice, beans, and then whatever veggies I got lying around, and then usually a thing of chicken sausages. And I realized that the chicken sausages, like, because I went without them and I just didn't have them. And then when I went back and had them again when I remade it, it doesn't like, didn't make me feel terribly good.
Now, would you say that that's part of you? Like, what was your appetite like when you were sick? What were you eating for that month that things were really rough?
Oh, man. Yeah, so that's kind of bringing us back around to that anxiety thing, which I talked about earlier in the podcast. For me, that I absolutely believe that COVID gave me some form of PTSD anxiety because there was like some good stretches where, you know, I couldn't really eat anything due to anxiety. And, you know, I've always had anxiety, but never to that level. And so with that, there was a lot of eating out that I did, and that was really anything that sounded good. So whether that was McDonald's, whether that was, we are fortunate to have a number of really good Mexican restaurants around here, and so I'd often go get Mexican, and then soups, lots of soups.
Okay. Yeah, where I was going with that is I was curious if, like, okay, during that time you were sick, maybe you just weren't eating meat, and then reintroducing it when you were feeling better, maybe you had some sort of reaction or just didn't handle it well. Because that seems to happen with people who go meatless and then come back to meat, whether upon preference or by accident. They don't enjoy it the same, or they don't like it, or it bothers their stomach. They have some sort of reaction to it. And you're just saying that after the virus, things just aren't really the same. They're not entirely different, but you're just not feeling 100% about your
food. Throughout the virus, I continued eating meat, and things felt normal. It's only been in the recent last couple of weeks where I've been like, this is interesting, you know?
So you're still learning absolutely more and more about it and how it's impacting your body. Yeah, man, that's it's really, really interesting. And it's crazy to me because we haven't heard, a ton of accounts from athletes, right? I mean, I see on the news, like, oh, you know, Cam Newton got coronavirus, and, like, you don't hear from him. He doesn't talk about it much. Or people will just be like, yeah, you know, I had a headache, and then I was in the ICU for 7 days. And it's like, well, what the hell was going on at that time, right? It's like they don't, you know, it's like all of this gray area. So I'm sorry I wanted to extrapolate this whole experience. But bringing us back in as we're winding down to the end of our time here, this is predominantly a sport podcast, a athletic in training related podcast. So I do want to, as we begin to close out the show here, kind of bring us back around full circle. We talked a little bit about your diet and your nutrition. Now, as it relates to running, we know that carbohydrate intake is important. Where do you lie on your spectrum of like what, how much, what kind of carbohydrates? Can you give some prospective runners an idea of what that intake looks like? Because I'm sure, much like you, when I was in high school, I didn't give a damn or knew anything about nutrition.
Yeah. So kind of the neat thing about carbohydrates, and especially living in the United States, is typically, you know, we get enough of carbohydrates, and it's definitely something. Usually those are the base of our meals, right? I just talked about the meal I have pretty regularly of rice, beans, veggies, and then whatever else I got. That's already a lot of carbs,
right?
And so I don't necessarily worry about carb intake. Where I mostly am concerned with is making sure that those veggies are present. Because in America, you know, typically we don't have a protein problem. Even people, you know, we just don't. The average American diet gets you, I want to say it's like twice the recommended amount at least. And so,
yeah, especially for non-active people.
Exactly. And so that's also not necessarily something I was terribly concerned about, but making sure I'm getting those micronutrients.
That's exactly what I you hit the nail on the head here. I've heard within the last couple of interviews I've had micronutrients be brought up, and I didn't get a chance to dive in with the last guest I had. Can you give the audience maybe some insight, in your knowledge of micronutrients and the role they play for not only general nutrition practice and function, but yeah, as so a runner?
For general, you know, you need the micronutrients in order for your body to function the way it's supposed to. I would suggest if you're ever feeling sluggish or anything of the like, you know, eat excess amounts of those veggies. And we're not talking iceberg lettuce. We're not talking, you know, we're talking like sweet potatoes, yeah, peppers, you know, all.
Yeah, not making a shredded lettuce salad.
Doesn't
guys.
Count. yeah, but really, really getting that variety in there. I guarantee you, you'll feel better because you're going to be getting those micronutrients. You're going to be, your body is going to have the resources that it needs to function properly. And so that's really what I would suggest. And then for runners, you know, it's even that much more important, you know, because we're asking and athletes in general, you know, we're asking our bodies to do these amazing things daily. And they really just, you know, if you're not doing what you can, then you're doing yourself a disservice.
Absolutely. And that leads me to my next question. You know, you're putting emphasis on, for general populations, increasing your vegetable intake. And that sounds pretty consistent with what the guidelines are for most, if not all, nutritional kind of guidelines, right? But as you fatigue yourself in the sport, you're obviously getting outside the means. Excuse me, sorry, my mic fell. You're obviously getting outside the, because of your fatigue and your output, you're going outside of what you're intaking naturally throughout the course of the day because you can't eat all day. So you're training a lot longer than you're eating and that you're intaking. Would you say that supplementation is an important part of your athletic venture, or is that something that you, because you're a college student and a student and on a budget, you're trying to maybe stay away from? Talk to me about your supplementation.
Yeah, so personally, I take vitamin C supplements.
Great for the immune system, by the way.
They also, I mean, you know, they taste good. They're a nice little treat, honestly.
They're fantastic. Bears, man. I love them.
And then the other big one for runners is iron. You know, if you are doing serious running, especially for your female listeners, you know, you need to be probably taking iron. And so, yeah, that's just, as 100%. An endurance athlete, that is something. You know, it's a super simple thing to do. If it bothers your stomach, take it every other day, because a study shown, I think this was from Australia, it showed that if you take it every other day, you get the same absorption rate as taking it every day with less GI problems.
That is an important thing to note, because too often are we kind of dousing our systems with supplements. For those that do decide to supplement, how many meatheads or just knuckleheads in general do you know that get all these stacks of worthless placebo pills that they don't even know that they're putting in their body, that have whatever proprietary blend that it's made up of, but you end up pissing a lot of that stuff out when you're over consuming it. It just gets excreted. And you made a really good point that I just wanted to press on for a second is kind of, you know, if you can understand, you may not know what's happening in your body and you may not know, you know, kind of what you're lacking, but if you can kind of self-analyze and say like, all right, these are my habits in the day. I'm not eating enough vegetables. I hardly ate today. Maybe that's who you are. You kind of see these memes all the time where it's like, I'm running on nicotine and caffeine, right? It's like, you know, like you're going to have some issues. So I think supplementation is not only good for athletes and what you said, as far as iron goes and just realizing for women too, that's important, but just generally supplementation can be beneficial. But it's within the understanding that, you know, less is more. I can't even tell you how much shit I've taken over the last several years of trying to obviously understand my body and as I grow to know more about exercise and physiology. And I'm sure you can attest to this too, Miles. Like, we all start out with this belief of like, well, I can take this and I'll be a muscle man, or I'll take this and I'll be, you know, shredded or whatever. And we end up with a stack of pills that is no different from our 90-year-old grandmother with, you know, her weak pill layout. And it's just like, man, you know, it's a lot of the source of the problem is people aren't focused on what's the root of where their fruits lie. And that's just the work, you know. That's half of it, man. Well, more than half of it is just doing the work. But supplementation, anyway, bringing us back around full circle, I think supplementation in general, I would agree with you, is super important. And as an athlete, I mean, you're expelling more energy. You need to replace it. Talk to me as we're closing out about kind of what you're, if you were to roughly give a guess about your caloric intake, some of your fitness goals. Like, I know you're a runner and I know that takes precedence over everything, right? As far as your prioritization goes, how well do I run? But do you consider like aesthetics? And if so, what does that reflect on your nutrition intake?
You know, no,
that's kind of a really broad
question. I think I understand. Obviously, you know, I'm a guy, I'm in college. I would love to look good. And that is obviously something that is, you know, at the forefront of my mind. However, what I would push most athletes who are striving for performance, I would push those individuals to stress performance over looks. And that comes with nutrition. Because at the end of the day, if you start freaking out over, oh, I don't look this way or what have you, and you start to let that, if you start to let those anxieties affect your eating habits, what you're putting in your body, then you're only going to go downhill from there. You know, you got to take care of the performance bit and just have faith that the rest will come in time.
There you have it, folks. I couldn't have said it better myself. And I've expressed this on multiple episodes, that we as athletes are focused on how the body operates under constraints as a means of competition and training, which does not always parallel aesthetic goals. As a runner yourself, and for me as somebody who's new to Olympic weightlifting, but also having the contrast to compare my experience with bodybuilding, man, I'll be the first to tell everybody and reaffirm what you're saying, that being 7% body fat and super ripped is not as fun as everybody wants to paint it out to be. Here's the thing. Nobody cares but you, and you're draining your energy and your life force and your quality of life to maintain that leanness. So I want to end off with that, man. Thank you so much for jumping on today and cutting it up with me. This turned out way better than I could have expected. You definitely hit me with a curveball that kind of changed the orientation of our interview today, man. I think in a great way,
it was great to be on here. You know, sports sports is a big part of my life and will hopefully continue to be for a long time to come. So I love talking about it, especially when it gets down to the nitty gritty.
Oh yeah, man. And I've already decided for sure that this is one of absolutely more conversations with you. This was really interesting. And I definitely want to dive in a little more about, you know, some of your athletic pursuits and kind of what the future of that looks like for you after your season hopefully gets to continue and finish. As we end off today, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you and just kind of your media outlets?
Yeah, for sure.
So, how they can get a hold of you.
On Twitter, sometimes I'll retweet some pretty great exercise science. So that's just, believe that's just miles.kane. And Kane is spelled C-A-I-N-E. And then same thing with Instagram. If you have Strava, highly recommend following me on Strava. Always love the extra kudos. That's where I'm at.
Awesome, man. And my last question to you is, if you had to run a race and choose, would you be running away from Trump or running towards Joe Biden?
Probably away. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd probably have your best PR, man. Yeah, for sure. For sure. I can't even tell you on what level I agree to that with, for sure, man. Thanks again for jumping on with me. And those of you listening, we do offer listener support. So if you enjoyed the podcast and you enjoy our episodes, please help us support the podcast by making a small donation and sharing. And if you haven't already, go ahead and check out our YouTube channel. We post not every day or every week or every month. So it'll really be a surprise when we do. Thanks again for jumping on with me, brother.
Yeah, have a good
we'll
one.
Talk again soon.